In this episode of Fictional Hangover, we discuss the past, the future, and a bat in Gloria O'Brien's History of the Future by A.S. King.
Hey everybody, welcome to Fictional Hangover, a podcast about young adult and new adult books, series, and authors that is full of spoilers. I'm Claire.
And I'm Amanda.
And today we're going to discuss Gloria O'Brien's History of the Future by A.S. King.
Standard disclaimer. If you haven't read this book, please remember that Fictional Hangover is all about spoilers. If you haven't read or listened and don't want to be spoiled, then stop listening to us and go read or listen to the book, then come back. If you haven't done this but want to pretend that you have, or if you don't care about spoilers, or if you just like the show so much that you don't care about any of that, then listen up.
Yay.
Hooray. Hooray.
Excellent.
Excellent. Do you think this episode's going to be 2 hours long?
No.
At least, like the last one?
At least. Oh my god.
At least.
Hopefully not. Well, I'm hoping to get less heebie-jeebie and creeped out and, you know, not be able to sleep when I go back to bed.
I don't know. This one's a little bit funky.
It is. It is strange. But it's less murderous.
It is less. There's a lot of murders that happen, though. Just not directly.
No, and it's a little bit desensitized when it's somewhat in the future. So,
yeah.
Let's see how that one goes.
All right. Well, I found some background info, and also I just want to talk about how much I love A.S. King as an actual human. So, first, the background info that I found is from an interview with BookPage from October 2014, and that's around the same time that this book came out. A.S. King says that young people must be fearless in standing up for themselves, whether against a frenemy or a discriminatory social norm. Don't you just love everything about her?
That is one of the greatest questions I have ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, the article says, put simply, she says with a laugh, the world is full of assholes. What are you doing to make sure you're not one of them? In a way, that's what every book I've written is about. It's a call to arms to not be garbage people.
Amen, sister. Amen. I can't disagree with a single word on that page.
I know. She's so great. I invited her to the library that I was working at several years ago.
Mm.
And she talked to my teenagers about not being garbage people, pretty much. And one thing that she said really stuck with me, and she talked about how each one of my kids, each teenager, each person has a suitcase that they carry with them everywhere that they go. And it's up to you to pack your suitcase. So if you don't want to carry around everyone else's shit that they've been giving you for your entire life, don't put it in your suitcase. Don't bring it with you. Carry what you want with you everywhere you go in your suitcase, because it's your suitcase. And I was like, that's awesome. Thank you for teaching those teenagers that.
That's
fantastic.
That is an amazing message. You know, she comes across as one of these people that just has, I say common sense, but just has very basic but good ideas. And that kind of metaphor is brilliant, because it's a simple concept with a fantastic message behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was like, I said on Twitter when I was mentioning we were going to talk about this book, my first foray into A.S. King, and it won't be the last, because she seems to get people, and she gets people across the spectrum.
Yes. And she just doesn't put up with any shit.
Mm.
And her characters don't either.
Well, some of them do.
They
need to learn the lesson. Otherwise, right. It's not going to be a very interesting story.
Right. I like her. Mm. She's good. I'm glad that you enjoyed the book as well, because, you know, I've asked some of my other friends to read her books, and some of them get it and some don't.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that you got it.
Well, that's it. It's that time of year when I start thinking about Christmas presents.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have a tendency to buy people books. because they are the greatest gift you can ever give.
Yes.
And I actually thought, ooh, what books have we read? What books are we going to read that would make good presents? It's a little difficult on the books that I haven't read yet, but to be fair, I've gifted books before just because the synopsis looked like it could be something that's going to interest people.
Yeah.
And this is one where I actually had to sit and think and debate who I may gift it to because I enjoyed it that much. But at the same time, there were aspects of it that I just didn't enjoy, and they were uncomfortable and they were awkward, and almost to a point where you might have to, like, you would even consider putting it as a trigger warning.
Mm.
So I'm not going to say who I am potentially going to be buying it for because spoilers. And these aren't that's not the spoilers we do on this show.
No, we don't ruin Christmas or birthdays on this show.
No, well, we attempt not to. I'm not going on Santa's naughty list. You try
really
hard
not to.
I'm not going on Santa's naughty list.
No, you can go on Naughty John's naughty list.
Oh God, no, please no. Oh my God, right, that's me not sleeping tonight, thank you.
Sorry.
So yeah, it's just one of these books where it was brilliant, and it's like when I was thinking about, like, before the show, it's like, what we always like to think about our initial thoughts, and for me it was, I remember you told me, okay, so I'm gonna suggest this book, she drinks a bat and then she starts to see some strange shit, and I was like, sorry, what, she drinks a bat? And you're like, yeah, you just go with it. And I'm like, I'm going with it. And then I was fine with the concept of the drinking of the bat. What I couldn't get my head around was how. And I was like, that would be really chunky.
Yeah.
Like, you know, how big's the bat? What kind of bat is it? What does a bat taste like? If it was a fruit bat, would it taste fruity? If it was a vampire bat, would it have a copper undertone?
So many things.
So many things. I got tied up in the logistics of it all.
I'm glad you thought about specific bats to drink.
Oh, I was on Google as well, and images, and no, I don't like the wingspan on that one. You know, there's one that's got this massive, like, goat head, got a dog head, and it's just flipping huge, and it's amazing. No. And I want to pet it, but I don't want to go anywhere near it at the same time, even though it's a vegetarian. Yeah. Anyways, but, yeah.
I would prefer, if I was going to drink a bat, I want to drink a small bat.
Well, yeah.
I don't want to drink a big bat. I want to drink a small bat.
No, I think Ellie and Glory had the right of it.
Yeah. I mean, their bat fit inside of a mason jar.
Exactly.
So it can't be that big.
No.
Small bat.
Yeah, small bat only.
Yes. But, yeah.
I think it's just one of these... It's one of these books that's completely uncomfortable. It's too honest. It's not too honest. It's honest.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful, it's special, and can you handle it?
Oh, yes, I like that. I like that end to that sentence.
What about you? You've read this before, you've read other A.S. King books, so for you, the entry into these books, these stories, and these discussions is often quite different. And
yes.
Quite often it's something that you've had a long time to think about and consider or reconsider.
Yeah. Well, I've read 3 or 4 or 5, I don't know how many of her books I've read. Not all of them, but I've read quite a few. And I have her latest one on my bookshelf, but I haven't read it yet. I think my favorite of her books that I've read is a toss-up either between this one and Still Life with Tornado. Just also a very good book, and it's also really kind of trippy and weird. The main character of that one, she sees her 10-year-old self and interacts with her 10-year-old self and, like, 21 and 40 and, like, invites them over to dinner at her house with her parents.
Mm-hmm.
And her parents don't realize that that's their child.
Ooh.
It's a little weird. A little weird, but very good.
And which one was that? Still Life?
Still Life with Tornado. Mm-hmm.
Mm.
So that's a good one, too. But I like everything about her. I like everything about A.S. King as a person. Yeah. And we don't normally do... I mean, I don't want to say that it's not, like, this isn't a realistic book. I would say it's magical realism. So, it's the real world every day. Like, they're going to the mall and... eating calzones and eating tacos with too much sour cream. but then also weird shit happens. And we don't do a lot of contemporary things.
No. So. I actually, that's one of the attractions to the book, because of the contemporary nature and the realism in it, but the twist.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as you can accept the twist, it's easier to understand, and it's easier to live with. And I like those kind of books. I don't mind contemporary. Often I struggle with it just being a plain story. Mm-hmm. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm really willing to read them, and I'm happy to read them, but it's not necessarily something I'm naturally attracted to on the bookshelf.
Right, me neither.
Whereas something with a little twist like this is more attractive for me, having that magical realism. So I really actually quite enjoy that. And even if it's just magical, it's like the traditional magical realism, but what I also consider it is when it's the contemporary, and you know, you've got your mobile phones and you're spending the time in the mall, etc., etc. But suddenly a fairy walks past, and that's fine because fairies are part of society. That kind of magical.
Yeah.
It's all intermingled. There's no explanations, no explanations needed or required or warranted, because that's the reality of it. It's just I like contemporary with a twist.
Yes. Yeah, me too.
Excellent.
I do also want to say that I really enjoyed the narration of this one.
Yes, I was hoping you were going to say that.
Yeah, Christine Lakin is the voice actor who did this one, and I'm not familiar with any of her other work. I haven't, you know, really dug deep into everything that she's done, but I think she did a great job. Glory is quite sarcastic, and she pulled that off very well. I think it was very well done.
Yeah, and there was definitely a contrast between Glory and Ellie. You know, you could feel the difference in them. She did a fantastic job. She's one of these narrators now, actually, that she's on my radar. I would look into her catalogue and base a book choice from her narration.
Yeah, I would too.
Yeah. Cool. Should we dig into the summary?
Let's do.
Glory O'Brien is graduating from high school in a week. She doesn't have any real friends, as she doesn't really let anyone in. She's just not bothered by things or people, graduation, college, or homecoming. She doesn't have a mother. Her mother still haunts her, though. Not in the ghoulish Hollywood way, but in the pictures she took still adorn the walls of her house kind of way. Her mother, Darla, killed herself by sticking her head in the oven. A very convenient way, she muses, when Glory was in preschool. It was letter endy. Glory takes photos, too, like Darla. Well, she thinks it like her mother. She didn't know Darla, and she can't ask her if she stuck her head in the oven. She has been working on the yearbook, but she's not part of the club. In the last days of school, Glory takes many pictures. She tries to take candid shots, but her classmates start posing more and more, asking her to take their picture. Their backgrounds to the chicken nuggets or extras in the mostly empty school bus.
Since the letter end day, Glory's father has gotten fatter because he got rid of their oven and cooks everything in the microwave. He was an artist, but hasn't picked up a paintbrush in years. He also doesn't talk about Darla. He won't let Glory into Darla's old darkroom. He won't use the oven. He won't really do much of anything. After Darla died, Glory's Aunt Amy used to come around to school her on Catholicism with her big fake boobs, but she doesn't come around anymore. It's not convenient. Not like an oven to stick your head into.
Glory's friend Ellie can't wait to get out of the freaky hippy-dippy commune she lives in with her parents, where microwaves are the same as an atomic bomb and the internet is an atomic bomb without the radiation, where children are handed a hammer before they can walk and they are homeschooled. Ellie hates it. It's stifling. Her mother is stifling. Ellie won't graduate at the same time as Glory. She doesn't know when she'll graduate, but homeschooling is great. It's the best. It's the best education you can have, she says, echoing the words of her mother, Jasmine Blue.
Glory and Ellie are friends, but also they're not friends. They've lived across the road from each other their entire lives. Glory in the house her mother's inheritance built. Ellie in her commune. They used to go to school together. Now, Glory goes to Ellie's house pretty much every day, as that's what she's supposed to do, right? Glory doesn't let anyone in, and that's why she doesn't really think of Ellie as her friend. Ellie shares a lot, asks a lot of questions, and seems to need Glory for information. And for lice treatment, because everyone gets lice all the time. But homeschool is the best! The commune is the best! Really, it really is the best.
In the eaves, it's really not. In the eaves of Ellie's house, they see a tiny bat. Its little elbow. Bats have elbows?
Do they have elbows? Surely they do.
They
have fingers at the end of their wings, right? Maybe they have elbows.
Do fingers equate elbows? That's a question for Google. That's a question for Google.
Yes. Do bats have elbows? Yeah. And do fingers equal elbows?
Yes. Well, if it has a little elbow, it's pointing to the east. Its wings are paper thin. The bat doesn't move all winter or all spring. They think it's dead. Ellie pokes it with a stick, as you do, and sniffs the end, as you do.
Is that what she learned? Is that what she learned in homeschool? Is that how you test whether things are alive? You poke them with a stick and smell it?
Homeschool is the best.
Homeschool is the best.
Homeschool is the best. Let's not argue with homeschool. The end doesn't smell of anything funny, so she knocks the bat down. They place the bat in a jar and store it in the barn, where Ellie's mum will never find it. Glory names the bat in her head Max Black, after the photography term. Her mother always tried to take the perfect Max Black to Max White picture.
Glory heads back over to Ellie's house after eating her soggy, tasteless, radioactive microwave dinner. She overhears Ellie and her secret boyfriend, Rick, arguing. He says he doesn't want to use a condom when they have sexy times. He promises to pull out saying it'll be fine, baby. Glory interrupts them. Way to go, Glory. And she hopes that Ellie doesn't listen to Rick. When Glory steps up to them, she decides that she doesn't actually want to be a part of this, so she leaves. Glory challenges herself not to go back over to Ellie's house. She doesn't even know why she goes over there in the first place.
Ellie reveals that she had sex with Rick and didn't tell her, even though they promised they would the day it happened. And they did it 2 weeks ago and have been since.
Oh, that's not a good move, Ellie. Not a good friend.
No, and Glory's pretty mad that she never told her. Not the fact that she had sex, but that she never kept her promise. Ellie says the lice have moved too. They're down there. Glory points out that lice don't move like that. That it's a different kind of lice down there. It takes a few moments for Ellie to realise that she has pubic lice. And a few months more, that it was Rick that had given them to in the first place. She needs some atomic radiation shampoo for them. Glory tells her she'll pick some up. Ellie is crying now and confesses that worse than pubic lice?
No, that can't. There's nothing worse than that.
Her mother found the bat in the jar. She wasn't happy and kept shaking it and shouting at her. The bat is now ash.
Pissed off, Ellie grabs a 6-pack of beer and Max Black's ashes in the jar. And they head out into the woods to get drunk. Glory tries to tell Ellie what her problems are, what's going on in her head, but Ellie is dismissive. Glory's problems surely can't be as big as pubic lice or Jupiterians. Are they Jupiterians yet? They're not Jupiterians yet, but they're coming. It was Ellie's idea that they should drink the bat, mixing Max Black's ashes with warm beer. They're both pretty tipsy, and it sounds like such a good idea. It'll bring them closer to God. Ellie takes the first sip. It's obviously disgusting, but then Glory downs the rest. Yep, it's pretty vile, and she wants to throw up.
Oh my God, you've just drank a bat.
I know, and warm beer? Ugh.
I'm actually more offended by the warm beer than I am about the bat.
I know, and it's probably not good beer. It's probably cheap beer.
It will be. It might be homebrew.
Oh, it probably is homebrew. Because they live on a commune.
Hippies,
so it might be good. It could be good.
It'll be beetroot beer.
Microbrewed. It's probably not good. Let's just agree that it's not good beer.
As they lie under the stars in quiet for a change, Glory sees Jupiter. Ellie hasn't given her the usual rundown of constellations, which Glory hates. But she hates it that Ellie is so quiet. As Glory looks up, she spots Jupiter, then sees it explode. And all the galaxy turning to darkness. Disconcerted and rather tipsy, she heads for home and goes straight to bed. The next morning, a mourning dove in the fruit trees outside her window wakes her up. She hates that fucking bird. She sees its ancestors, its great-great-great-grandfather, being hit by a car, its children, its grandchildren, the extinction of the species.
And yes, that's weird, but Glory just goes to Sears to buy a graduation dress after this, and she doesn't really care about graduation, so to Sears she goes. As she walks through the mall, Glory looks at a little girl and sees that that little girl's son will be a doctor, and he'll help so many people all over the world in the most terrible places. She sees a man who has no future because he has no children. In the changing room, there are two mirrors. Glory looks into one and sees nothing. No history, no future. What does that mean? Who knows? She buys the dress and goes home.
When Glory gets home, her father is sitting on the sofa. She stands looking at him. She sees the O'Briens back to the 15th century, but no future. Glory takes a deep breath and asks if she can have the key to her mother's dark room, a place she has never been allowed into, a place her father has never let her into. Surprisingly, he says yes, but not to share her mother's recipes. Chemical recipes, you know, not like cakes.
No, God, no. No cakes, because we don't have ovens. No, none of that. None of that. Yikes. Glory is in Darla's darkroom. It's middle gray. 50% between Max White and Max Black. That's how I feel about the room, Glory says. Glory looks at all the sketchbooks, the trays, and the paper. It's the closest she's ever been to her mother. Ellie calls. She needs the atomic bomb shampoo. She also needs to speak to Glory because she keeps seeing really weird things. Glory tells her to come over. Before Ellie gets there, Glory notices a gap on the shelf and manages to reach up and feels a hidden sketchbook titled Why People Take Pictures. Darla's handwriting is exactly the same as Glory's. In the sketchbook, it says, I am no one special. I am tortured by the fact I am no one special. I am comforted by the fact that I am no one special. Can you handle that? Can you handle that you are most likely no one special too? Most people can't handle it.
Glory heads back upstairs, reeling from those words. Ellie will soon be there. Her father points to the atomic radiation shampoo and asks if there's anything she needs to tell him. Ellie is a slut. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree, he mutters. He never says anything nice about Jasmine Blue. He never even mentions her by name. But the comment couldn't have been at a worse time after being in Darla's dark room, after reading Darla's words in the same handwriting.
Ellie is beginning the transmissions too. It was just the beer, right? They were drunk. It's got to be the beer. That's what it was. Glory doesn't want to talk about it. Surprise, surprise. Ellie thinks that the lice are Jupiterians. Oh, there they are. There's the Jupiterians. I love the Jupiterians. Ellie thinks the lice are Jupiterians. They've come from Jupiter to learn about humans after all... They've come from Jupiter to learn about humans. After all, the head and the crotch are probably the most important parts, aren't they? No. Ellie feels like a slut. She saw Rick with someone's mom. He's probably given her the Jupiterians, too. Ellie thinks that the rules for Rick are different because he's a guy.
Bullshit.
Glory argues that that is bullshit. Oh, yes, definitely. It's definitely bullshit.
Sorry, I didn't even realize the next sentence calls it bullshit. Sorry. Sorry.
Yeah, it's bullshit. It is. It is. I hate it. Ellie kills the Jupiterians and goes home. She's looking forward to her star party tomorrow night. Glory has to remind her that it's her graduation. Ellie is sad about it because she wants to go. Glory realizes Ellie is being left behind. Are we sad about that, though?
No.
Are we sad about that? No.
Oh, God, Ellie was so annoying. Not. It's graduation day. Glory doesn't want to go. She wants to stay in Darla's dark room and read her sketchbook. She wrote that she feels tortured. Glory feels the same. Tortured by sandwich meat and salads, little things, big things. There's a picture in the sketchbook of a naked lady with her head torn off. Why would she do this? There's a picture of a man with his head blown off. Why would he do this? Darla names him Bill. Back upstairs, Glory asks her father to start painting again, and he scoffs. Glory heads to the school. Ellie is waiting, and she's an absolute mess. Bits of her hair and writing up and down her arm. She's really jittery. Ellie says she doesn't think she can stay. She looks frantic.
Glory looks at people as they file through to the football stadium, catches the eye of the teachers, parents, the superintendent, and sees their infinity. It's too much. But it's also not enough. Finally, Glory walks across the stage, and her father calls out, "Cupcake! Woo, cupcake!" Ellie calls out, and then tassels her switch sides, and it's all done. Her father has an envelope for her. Its contents should make her smile. Glory realizes that she probably hasn't smiled for 13 years. Inside the envelope is a check for $50,000. I think that would make me smile.
I think I'd run around going, woo!
Woo!
Glory's dad, Roy, leaves the graduation, and Glory is ambushed by Stacey, a girl who she started first grade with and now graduates with. As she talks about futures, Glory sees Stacey's and her child and her grandchildren. She keeps seeing something about a second civil war. In others, she has seen more world wars. Hell, she's even seen an intergalactic war with photon torpedoes. She needs to know more. Glory will write the history of the future so that someday someone may make sense of it. Ellie is sitting in Glory's car and looks frazzled. The writing across her arms read, "Free yourself." Ellie wants it all to stop. She doesn't understand why or how this is happening. She sees naked stuff. She thinks she's going crazy. Glory tells her she isn't special and that she isn't special. Can you handle that?
From Glory O'Brien's History of the Future. The Second Civil War was created from a loophole on the Equal Pay Act. One state uses this loophole to stop all women working, tying it to a family act. Even female senators and congresswomen are escorted from their offices. No woman can work, not as a waitress, not as an Avon lady, nothing. They can't work anymore at all.
At home, Roy is on the sofa, laptop out. Glory heads down to the dark room and Darla's secret sketchbook. There are more pictures of the headless naked woman, this time with the head. This time she can see who it is. It's Jasmine Blue. She looks just like Ellie. Glory confronts her dad about when they first moved here and how he never says Jasmine's name. They were idealistic when there was just the four of them back in the 90s. They moved out here to be anti-consumerist, but then Jasmine started to gather her flock. Jasmine's house was given to her by Darla. Roy admits that Jasmine tried to steal him away, but that wasn't the reason for Darla's head in the oven. He doesn't want to talk about it anymore. Glory wants to know why there were naked pictures of Jasmine. Old Glory would have let it go, but Glory the Bat won't. Jasmine gave them to him. Darla found them. Things went bad from then on.
God, you can't say that that doesn't have anything to do with her putting her head in the oven, because I feel like that might have something to do with her putting her head in the oven.
I think the head in the oven thing is probably a compound of multiple reasons, and that's going to be certainly one of them.
From Glory O'Brien's History of the Future. The Family Protection Act will spread like lice. There are rises in homelessness, benefit applications, assault against women and girls. Several states will secede.
We're taking our country back. We gave women 200 years to reinvent themselves. I think that's long enough.
The Father's Count law prevents benefits, causing even worse situations like hunger and death.
Glory arrives at the commune for the star party. Ellie keeps seeing naked people and hasn't seen anything to do with the war. She sees Jasmine will have two great-grandsons, and as an only child, they'll be hers. Ellie has seen floods, but also cool boats, that there's no oil left. Ellie is having hippie visions. Glory is having war visions. Jasmine congratulates Glory on her graduation and is surprised that instead of going to college, she's taking a year and spending it in Darla's dark room. As Jasmine scratches her pubic bone, pointed look, Jupiterian's man, Glory sees the two great-grandsons, both of whom will serve in the new American Army during the Second Civil War. One will be part of K Division, the other will be trapped in a burning building and melt like vegan cheese. Her future ends there.
Yikes.
How melty is vegan cheese? I don't think I've ever had.
I don't know. But, I mean, you don't want to melt.
No, that's I just sure. keep getting
no matter how
Indiana Jones visions of melting.
Yes. Oh, this is a great tie-in to our last book, then. Because we were talking about the Nazis melting and looking at the Ark of the Covenant.
Yes.
I like to tie them all together somehow.
I think every single one of ours has been linked somehow. It's like 6 degrees of fictional hangover.
It is. I love it. I love figuring these things out. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead. What? Sorry, go ahead.
Go and drink a bat.
I will drink a bat. Thank you very much.
With chunky bits. And warm beer, anyway.
Can I put my bat in brown pop?
No.
Nope, that's for me. That's what I'm drinking. That's how I'm drinking my bat.
You're just wrong. Professionalism, people. Rick arrives to the party. Glory looks into his eyes. And as she warns him to keep away from Ellie, she gets a transmission. Rick already has two children, and they live on the commune.
Yeesh.
Oh, Rick.
From Gloria O'Brien's History of the Future. The Father's Count Law will stop child support. A father no longer living with his family will no longer need to pay. The women are branded as the ones walking out. Fathers will be able to walk out if they feel like their wife isn't meeting their personal or domestic needs. If a woman leaves her husband under any circumstances, they will be breaking the Father's Count Law. I hate all of these laws. It's a nightmare.
I was getting angry before, but at this point, I was raging. Absolutely, yeah. Raging. After a surprisingly frank conversation with Ellie's dad about Darla, Gloria heads home, back to the dark room. The next day, Gloria drives around. She needs to clear her head. Going past the high school, she stops to take pictures of the empty bleachers, podium and the stage. She also photographs Ellie's graffiti under the bleachers. Free yourself. Have the courage. And who is the bat? Gloria writes at each, I am, photographing each reply.
From Gloria O'Brien's History of the Future. Nedrick the Sanctimonious comes from an unconventional place. Nedrick has every intention of war. He crosses the border into old America to steal girls. They'll take any. They won't discriminate, but would prefer young teenagers as they're the easiest to sell. Nedrick will support the new laws. He will speak eloquently and claim to be the smartest man in the world. He's the most moronic dipshit of them all.
Gloria and Ellie head to the mall. Ellie will eat the most disgustingly processed food she can find. Gloria will look for transmissions. When Ellie returns to their booth, Gloria turns to her and says, they use them for breeding in camps. Shit.
Yeah, ha. Oh.
Gloria sees a smiling guy in a wheelchair and a USS pledge cap. In the transmission, she sees that his great-grandsons will hurt the O'Briens. She can see a tunnel, but not much else. Gloria has a panic attack and needs to leave the mall. Leave Ellie, who is such a selfish bitch, or just plain clueless, who refuses to go and is on her one day away. Gloria, in anger and frustration, tells her about Rick and his kids. Leaving Ellie at the mall, Gloria heads to the library to research tunnels and war. It's terrifying. After a couple of hours, she picks Ellie up and heads for home. There are no apologies. Ellie acknowledges that she thinks she knows one of the kids. Gloria admits she doesn't want to be around people right now, and that includes Ellie, who just doesn't understand. She doesn't understand you can't get over a panic attack. You can't get over the death of a parent. That Gloria has shit going on that doesn't involve boyfriends and sex.
Ellie is not a good friend.
Ellie's not a good person.
Drives me crazy. No, she's not. From Gloria O'Brien's History of the Future. The war will start with a very big bomb at a state capitol building with Nedrick the Sanctimonious declaring war on TV. New America isn't just a bunch of hillbillies. They have amassed an army. The president will need more than the National Guard to fight them. Glory heads down to Darla's darkroom and begins the process of developing her pictures. She understands the therapeutic nature of it. She looks through more of Darla's sketchbooks, this time the ones not hidden. More pictures of her and Roy with a caption, sometimes feel like I'm in a latex bubble. Glory needs to leave the darkroom for now. And as she gets up to the door, she sees a tooth hanging from the ceiling. The tooth from pictures in one of Darla's sketchbooks. There's a note attached. Not living your life is like killing yourself, except it takes longer.
Roy is in the kitchen. It's time he and Glory talked properly. They discuss Darla. She is missed. Her actions are not understood. She declined help. They discuss hate. Roy hates Jasmine Blue. Glory thinks she's starting to hate Ellie. Hate is a strong word. They discuss the past. Mr. Wilson, the school photography teacher, would take pornographic pictures. Darla would print them in the place in the mall she worked at. The tooth is Darla's. Darla was different after it was removed. Keeping the naked pictures of Jasmine Blue is a regret. They discuss the future. Gloria wants Roy to paint again. Both she and Roy are in tears. They promise to keep talking.
From Gloria O'Brien's History of the Future. Old America will gather an army big enough to secure the border. New America will take two states on in the first 9 weeks. Nedrick the Sanctimonious will have more and more public appearances. His platform? That everyone over 60 should be euthanized. Public schools should be closed. And that women are only good for one thing, without saying what. Girls will disappear more commonly and in higher numbers.
The next day, Gloria wants to spend it alone, except Ellie calls and they end up at the mall again. Ellie goes in one direction. Gloria takes a seat in the main thoroughfare. She sees the most completely gorgeous man holding a clipboard. He smiles and Gloria smiles back. He sits down at the bench next to hers. Gloria sees a transmission. He will marry his soulmate who he met in the mall in June 2014. Could it be her? His name is Peter. He's 22 and at college doing a summer project. Gloria is his first tick of the day. He says she is different. She is his lighthouse because she smiled when he smiled. She smiled back. That's his project. His survey. They make small talk about music and stuff. Peter says Gloria has set a high bar of cool. She doesn't have any friends. She doesn't want any. Peter wants to interview her for his projects, so hands over his card. Gloria takes it.
Oh, it's so cute. It is so cute. Before meeting up with Ellie for lunch, Gloria buys a pair of red-lensed sunglasses with little bats on them. They make her see in darkroom colors. I am dead. I am the bat. I am no one special. And I am free.
Gloria and Ellie leave the mall. They have an argument. Gloria tells Ellie she doesn't listen to her, that she is self-centered. Ellie is pissed and annoyed, but not willing to give up on their relationship. Gloria wants her to. Instead, they head to the high street, where they go again their separate ways for a time. Gloria does her own smile survey. Crosses and ticks. She only gets one tick from a woman, currently in her early 20s, who will one day be her best friend. Gloria already likes her better than Ellie. She's smiling to help her feel a little better. She's smiling as revenge against the world. Smiling is the cure for the mother in the oven.
From Gloria O'Brien's History of the Future. Nedrick the Sanctimonious will make mistakes. He will forget that blowing people up will make other people stronger eventually. His flock in New America will be lost as he ignores them, looking at his army. He will blame the rebels. O'Brien will be at the top of his list of rebel leaders. Riots in the ceded states will happen. He will discipline his soldiers. The states become camps.
There is another star party at the commune. Gloria heads over looking for Ellie. She's told she's in the field. She is. She's having sex with Marcus the perv. But she's in the field.
Marcus. We didn't even talk about Marcus the perv, but he's so gross.
Yeah.
Made Glory touch his... Tent. Touch his teepee.
Yes.
Yikes. No. Oh. Do not... Listen, everyone. I have to interject here. If you are a young boy, do not make a girl touch your penis in your pants. Don't make her do it. She doesn't want to.
And also, don't send dick pics. They're gross. Nobody wants them.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay. Gloria went over to talk with Ellie properly. She wanted to tell Ellie she's mad at the world. She does, and Ellie doesn't listen. Am I a slut? She asks. No. She is a slut, Gloria thinks. Gloria tells Ellie she owns the commune land. Ellie confesses that Marcus is still a perv, just paying attention to her boobs. Gloria decides she lives next to sex-crazed hippies, and that a day without transmissions would be better than a day with Ellie. She tries to rest back at home but can't, and instead looks up the USS Pledge online. There were two. One was sunk, and another sold. She looks up squatter rights in Pennsylvania.
From Gloria O'Brien's History of the Future. Ferris Company will fail. They don't know about the tunnels in the exiled force camps. Breeding camps will fall shortly after being established. The new American army will be divided. Some follow, some defect, some murdered by the sniper that seems to know exactly where the groups are, as if she knows and arrives just in time at just the right spot. The sniper looks familiar from behind. She looks intriguing.
Using an online template, Glory creates a letter of cease and desist to Senator Jasmine Blue, signed Love, Glory O'Brien. Ellie comes over with attitude. What a pain in the ass. She needs to check that what Glory said about the land is true. It is. Ellie finally remarks to Glory that it must be hard to have lost her mom. It's only taken until there was 17 for her to say this. Glory decides to end their friendship there and then. Past doesn't have to be present. Present doesn't have to be the future. Free yourself.
Glory plopped herself down in the living room with her dad. History of the future in hand. He doesn't seem scared to talk like he has in the past, so maybe it's good for him too. Glory hands her dad the letter. He hates confrontation, but he also hates Jasmine Blue. The two together is just too much. It's all too much. Squatting without thanking them, stealing by waiting it out. They need to sell the land so they can move on. Just sell everything and go. To LA, to the Virgin Islands, anywhere. Glory wants to move on to college and start doing shit.
Back in the dark room, Glory removes the hanging tooth and has an imaginary conversation with Darla. It forces her back upstairs. Transmission with Dad. He will die an old man, and she will be with him. She's older and wearing a headband that looks odd, like a bandage.
From Gloria O'Brien's History of the Future. The sniper will almost kill Nedric the Sanctimonious twice. The second time, outside his house, the sniper will make it out alive, but the dogs chasing her will discover her tunnel. During the next week, the government's armies take back most of its states, and residents will be happy. The final push is on. The sniper will wait in her tunnels with the rebels. Her husband, the explosives expert, will plant bombs under the enemy territory.
As Glory heads to Ellie's, she notices the most beautiful sunset she has ever seen. She doesn't know that it will be the last as Max Black the Bat. Transmission from Rick, grandfather on the USS Pledge hit by a torpedo. Wasn't expected to live after taking shrapnel in the back. Loses both legs. Loves calzones made in the local mall.
Ellie needs to talk about something important, but not at the commune. At Glory's house. Ellie walks into her house through the front door, which they don't ever use, which irritates Glory. Surprise! Aunt Amy, party things, commune residents, yearbook club, people from first grade are all there. Roy looks pained. Ellie helped organize the graduation party with Glory's Aunt Amy. Glory realizes she doesn't know how to have fun. She watches people have fun. Stacy from first grade through graduation tells her she's cool. Really? Yearbook club kid wants her yearbook to sign. She doesn't get it. Why would anyone want to sign her yearbook? She's not cool. She doesn't have any friends. Why do they want her yearbook?
That's her opinion. Glory wants to go back.
Because she is cool. Sorry, I keep interrupting you, but she is cool. I like her. I like her so much.
Glory wants to go back to the present. She doesn't want to see infinity anymore and prays to the sky. Transmission from Ed Hefner. Ellie is crying. She gets into a car and leaves, never coming back. Glory fetches her yearbook eventually, after much pestering, and it's passed around and signed. It takes forever. She preferred the predictions in the yearbook than hers through the transmissions. Glory receives a graduation card from her Aunt Amy. In it, she writes that Darla would be proud, that she wants to help fill the hole, that she's sorry she hasn't sooner. Glory realises that the dark room and the sketchbook didn't have all the answers, only Darla, but Amy might be able to help. She wants to talk, but not tonight. Over the summer sometime. Transmission. Amy's grandson will run an orphanage and bring families back together. The orphanage is the barn at the commune.
From Gloria O'Brien's History of the Future. Nedric and the last of his followers will go to the governor's mansion in the last controlled states and burn it down. They will discover the governor still employs women, even against his very own law. People will wonder how they ended up as slaves. The sniper and her husband still wait with the exiles in the tunnels.
Glory heads to the mall. Peter's then is happy to see her. She has her camera with her and she takes pictures of him carrying out his survey. A girl gives him her number. Transmission. He will climb to a treehouse to rescue a baby. He will be old when this happens. She limits her pictures to inanimate things after this. People seem put out by her camera when everyone has iPhones these days. It's very strange. Glory then bumps into the USS Pledge man and they talk about cameras and go for lunch together for calzones. Glory asks about his cap. He doesn't believe anyone her age would be interested, but she persists. USS Pledge guy says his grandson is stuck in a cult. He wants him out. She takes pictures of him. Transmission. I will be the one in the tunnel with stark white hair and combat pants. I will be in the tunnel as it fills with smoke, with Peter and a little boy, and the pickup truck guy holding a flamethrower. The boy will be his. He will recognise his father and plead not to do it. But I am enemy number one, leader of the resistance, the sniper, and far more important than some bastard son. I realised I was no part of Darla. I would live. I would really live. Glory stares straight into Peter's eyes. No transmission. No transmissions from anyone. The bat was gone.
From Gloria O'Brien's History of the Future. An explosion will scatter the new American army in all directions. The sniper and her husband will run to safer tunnels. There's a familiar boy there. The man from the red pickup truck will follow. Come with us, they offer. He looks tempted. I've been looking for you. He burns them. But when he leaves, they are still breathing. Yikes! That part makes me say yikes.
It's really cringy, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, just torched.
Do you not like? Ellie comes over to Glory's house. The bat is gone. They decide to celebrate with beer. Well, Ellie does. With Max Black gone, they had nothing in common anymore. Glory tells her she wrote the history of the future. She might be famous. Glory tells her she had lunch with the wheelchair guy, who turns out to be Rick's grandfather. Ellie does acknowledge that she approves that Peter was there. Ellie calls Marcus.
Roy has called a lawyer about the squatter laws. He's going to do it officially. Glory wants him to start painting again and has an assignment for him. Ovens. She wants him to paint ovens. Shit. Later, Roy shouts that he's heading over to the commune. Glory watches from the porch. Jasmine follows Roy back across the road. She's mad and shouts that he can't do this. He points out that they've never paid their taxes on it, and so he has to. Jasmine doesn't believe in taxes. Can't you let this go? What whole thing? Darla. Ugh, yikes. Don't freaking yell at him about letting Darla go. That's so stupid. Jasmine turns to Glory. You're as fucked up as your mother was. And Glory says, thank you.
The next day, Ellie comes over around noon. They're leaving that day, and they've been packing all night. She doesn't know where to, but the chickens and ducks can't come. That upsets her. They pile into Glory's car. They're going to head to the beach. It's only 3 hours away. An hour later, at a pit stop, they turn around. Ellie is scared they will leave without her. Today is their last day. While Glory and Ellie were out, Jasmine came over and demanded to search the house for Ellie. As she was upstairs, Roy got the pictures of her out from Why People Take Pictures and left them on the dining room table for Jasmine to find. She couldn't see anything because Ed was waiting on the front porch. What would they do with them? Nothing. Glory was sad for losing Ellie, which is strange. Glory hands Ellie a $10,000 cashier check. It's your way out. Don't tell anyone. Then she saw her transmission come to life. Glory's heart breaks. It's all true. Back in the house, Glory tells her dad they will buy an electric oven. Roy has ordered canvas. He will paint ovens. Glory arranges to meet Peter on High Street the next day. Her runaway train this last week has come to a graceful stop.
From Glory O'Brien's History of the Future. In the future, there will be spaceships, cures for disease, and as the population explodes, people will realize that they are no one special. But everyone is here to do something. The job is to find out what. You will do great things. Can you handle that?
Ooh.
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 Ooh. Ooh. Ooh.
Love, love, love.
Such a good ending to the ending. Book. Loved it.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, I love the whole thing.
Yeah. It's a good... It's a very good, interesting, wonderful, scary All the Emotions book. All the emotions. Yes.
All of them.
Like, irritation with Ellie. Absolute bloody seeing red rage at the Second Civil War laws.
Yeah.
Just rage, burning rage in my mind. Burning. It burns. Rage.
Just flames. Flames on in the side my mind. Of your face.
And flames. For those who don't understand, that's a Clue reference. Go and see the movie.
Yeah, definitely. You need to watch Clue.
Love that movie.
It's one of my favourite movies of all time.
Flawless. It's flawless.
Yes.
I love that movie. Anywho.
Me too. Okay, let's get back to this. Clearly, we need to start talking about our favourite movies too. We discussed this last time. It needs to happen.
Okay. Ooh.
Okay. Ooh, for the eighth time.
Ooh. All the feels. All the feels.
Yes, all of them. Can I just say that I love Glory's transformation throughout this book? It's not even, like, how long did they have Max Black the Bat? Like, not even a week? Was it a week?
I wouldn't even say it was a week.
And she completely changes. But can you imagine having seen all of the stuff that she saw in those days?
And not like, changing. How could you see all of that right. and not change? It has to change a person. But yeah. then, in contrast, if you think about Ellie, she had no growth. She learned no lessons. But then what she was seeing seemed to be very vastly different from Glory. It's like the transmissions matched their inner personality.
Right. I think that is true. Ellie's just so vapid and she only cares about sex and... So what does she see with all of her transmissions? Naked people. Yeah. And Glory doesn't even know who she is. And she's so, like, tied up in the past with her mom killing herself. And is she even going to have a future? So that's what she sees. And then she realizes that she does have a future. And she's actually worth being a person.
Yeah.
Like, she thought... There were several times throughout the book where she... kind of briefly mentioned suicide, maybe. You know, she didn't even think that she was still going to be there, and now she realizes that she is, and she's going to do huge things and, like, save the world.
Yeah. That's what was interesting about, because you do start with the transmissions, and she starts mentioning the sniper, and especially genders the sniper. You kind of think, oh, is that somebody we've met? Is this somebody who, yeah. And you kind of, okay. And then it's like a jigsaw puzzle that slowly you get the pieces to and you can start to see the picture. And you realise, long before Glory realises, that she is the sniper.
Yeah.
And you're like, ooh, everything's going to be fine. Because up until that point, the book could have ended one of two ways. She could have... had these self-realizations that she has had and how it ended, or which I thought was a distinct possibility, it would have ended in her death.
Mm-hmm.
And either way would have been an unsurprising ending given the subject matter and the way that it's addressed. It was distressing the way she compared herself so much to Darla.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. I don't know if you remember off the top of your head, because I don't, but she has her transmissions, like when she looks at her dad and she only sees his past. She doesn't see a future. But then suddenly, a little bit later, she does. So is that the same time where she makes a switch in her head where she's not going, like she's gonna stay, she's not going to kill herself? Because then... she's able to see, like, that she has grandchildren or something like that. So...
kind of, but I don't know if she actually has children. Because the only future transmission she sees from her father is his death as a very old man. I love that snarky.
No, that's right.
The snarky, don't worry, Dad, you're going to die old.
Yeah.
So, and bearing in mind that at the time, you know, she knows her future is... potentially to die in that tunnel. She's still breathing. Mm-hmm. We don't know if that is going to be when her eventual death takes place, you know, after saving the world. But she's still breathing, so she could live longer. You don't know exactly what's going on there. And I kind of picked up that yes and no to answer your question. Short answer, long answer. She only saw her father's, the O'Brien's past for me, because she was, like you say, not accepting that she would have a future.
Mm-hmm.
And she was essentially walking in Darla's shadow.
Yeah.
And then when she realizes, actually, yeah, she, everyone's something special. Yes, she can handle that. And yes, she will step into the shoes of greatness. She's more accepting and open. So I think that it's established that the transmissions are pretty much set as is.
Yeah.
And I think the only reason she picked up that transmission is because she was then receptive to it. Like, it's like she couldn't tune that channel in yet. She had to go back through the motions and get that to be able to scan that channel. Which is why with Ellie, you know, how we're saying she's only seeing naked people, and because she's such a vapid, vacuous, self-centred bitch, for me, anyway, she only sees things that probably affect her, direct impact her, or non-essential, non-events, you know. There was the shoe fetish guy, you know, those type of things. If she was suddenly to be a bit more self-aware and aware of her surroundings and actually listen to Glory when she's saying that she's mad at the world and, you know, that there's history and problems that she needs to discuss. She needs our best friend, as much as she's unwilling to admit it throughout the vast majority of the book. If she was to make that leap and accept it fully, not just on the surface, I think she would have started to see different transmissions. Yeah. That's purely my interpretation of it, though.
Yeah, I think that I can agree with your interpretation of it. She did see one semi-important one with, I mean, the boats, and she was stupid to be like, oh yeah, it's a cool boat. But she did realize that, like, there's no more oil left, and this is how they're, like, and she saw people living in trees.
Yes, she saw the tree houses and didn't equate it to the fact that it's refugees.
Yeah.
So she did see bits, but again, when they reference it to Ellie sees hippie visions, I see visions of war, Ellie's only picking up on the stuff I think that she's willing to accept.
Yeah.
Glory is a very mature person. Very mature. And the past few books we've had a protagonist who's been 17, and each one of them has been a vastly different person.
Yes.
With vastly different maturity levels, self-awareness, worldliness, and acceptance. Like, Ellie personifies the magazine, you know, ideal. Like, I need to look like this. I need to unbutton my shirt by 3 buttons and have my boobs out. I need to have sex. She doesn't want to have sex. I genuinely don't think Ellie wants to have sex, but she feels like she has to. Whereas Glory is like,
it's the same when she talks about how Rick is like, well, it's okay for him to sleep around.
Yeah.
Like, that's the same thing that she's been taught.
Well, actually, from her magazines. It's really not. It's really, really not. And I'm sorry, love, your homeschooling is shit.
Yeah.
It is not the best. It is rubbish. And it's, again, she's like, I'm not going to say stereotypical, I don't know what the word is. Is she a typical teenager who's very self-centred and vacuous? And I don't think that's the case. I think, you know, like I said, the past few weeks we've been having 17-year-old protagonists. Ellie is one end of the spectrum we've looked at, and Glory is the other. And we've looked and talked about everything in between, and it's quite interesting to see that difference. So, like, to harken back to House of Night, we were saying that Zoe needs to mature.
Yes,
she starts off at the Ellie end of the scale, and is slowly moving up. And when we've mm-hmm. talked about, like, Rowan in Teeth of Mist, Mist of Teeth, I will always do that. You know, she
Teeth
was...
Teeth in the Mist.
She was a very different 17-year-old than what Zoe in Teeth in the Mist was, who was a mm-hmm. bit more of the Ellie side, whereas Rowan is a bit closer to the Glory side. And you can just, you can almost see the pattern, almost see the structure of that linear line. And, you know, one end of the scale to the other, one's... No, I say far left, far right, but not in the political terms. But yeah, it's I'm seeing these tie-ins, and I'm very interested by that. It's like I almost want to write a paper about it.
Oh yeah, I would like to see. We have like a line of all of our characters that we've discussed, and I like that Ellie is at the far end and Glory is at the other end, and then we can shove all of the other characters that we've discussed in between, because I think you're not going to get much more intelligent and learned about the entire world than Glory, because she's seen the entire infinity of everything.
So
she's at the top, and then Ellie, with her Jupiterian pubic lice, is down at the very other end of the spectrum. So I would like to stick everyone on there. I think that we should do it. We should figure out how to make that happen and
yeah,
share it. And just add everyone to it as we go along.
I mean, it's pure coincidence that this is like being a common theme in the past few weeks. And it's kind of like, it's just pure coincidence that that's been a theme the past couple of weeks. And it's as I'm listening to the books, or reading the books, and I'm like, actually, you can't help but compare. It's just all these things that just kind of, like, struck me.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Anyway.
Yeah.
I feel like I've gone off topic.
But not really. I mean, we're having actual discussions of the book, which is good.
I think the evolution of Glory... Evolution, is that wrong? Mental evolution? Mental realization?
I think that's a fine... Those are fine word choices.
Yeah, I don't want to be disrespectful to her and her journey. I really enjoyed that, like really enjoyed it. I was so worried about her at the beginning, and there is always a possibility in a book like this, which is standalone, that there's a reason standalone is because you're not going to meet that character anymore.
Yeah.
But particularly the graduation party was... interesting for me. She didn't want it. She said to her dad all the way through, I don't want a graduation party. I don't want friends. I don't have friends. I don't like people. People don't like me. And then actually, do you realise that you never felt part of a community, but you were part of a community and you were an accepted part of the community and people liked you and wanted to know you, but mm-hmm. you kept them at arm's length? And that's not to judge. That's a realisation that you need to accept. And then when she's reading the prediction of her future in the yearbook, and she's like, this is what I want to see, not what's in the sketchbook. And I think she realises that at this point, Darla's mental health and her deterioration is not the route that she is going to go down, because she isn't Darla. They are two very separate people, and Darla needed help that she didn't go to get or didn't accept when Roy tried to get it for her.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that party actually helped with that, because
I think so too. Especially the card that she got from her aunt, like knowing that she wants to help. She wants to help fill that hole. I think that was big in her progression.
Yeah. She didn't talk to people purposefully, and it was having that forced conversation. It's like the conversation she had with Roy, her dad, where she's like, actually, he's not afraid to talk to me anymore. And it's not too little too late, which is a positive thing.
Yeah. I'm glad that she did start talking to him, though, and they both realized that they don't have to be stuck. That Darla was a big part of their lives, but Darla is not their entire life. And now that they've both come to this realization, they can both move on. And just because you move on doesn't mean you have to forget her.
No,
But they can go on with their lives and continue to do great things, even though she's not there anymore.
Yeah. And it is difficult. I found some of the book a little bit difficult because I felt like in some respects I related to Glory. So, like, you know when Ellie's talking about when they were 14 and she supposedly fancied one of these guys and she didn't really, and Glory's not interested in boys from 14 to 17 at this stage until she meets Peter. And yeah, I can kind of get with that because I remember being at school and not feeling like a typical teenager because I was friends with lots of boys, but I wasn't wanting them to be my boyfriend. I wasn't in that place where I wanted that kind of relationship. It wasn't until I met Colin. But also I can understand how losing a parent at a very, very young age triggers for the rest of your life. I lost my dad when I was 4. It wasn't the same circumstances, it was illness. He died from cancer. So it wasn't his choice. But I do know that at certain points in your life, you do think, actually, this is huge. So for Glory, the first big thing that happens to her where you expect a parent to be is a graduation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's why, you know, it opens up with, she's graduating in a week. And her mother's not there. And I can understand how that's a trigger for the lack of parent, because it's happened to me in my life. I specifically remember being on my hen party and getting very, very upset because my dad wasn't going to be the one to walk me down the aisle when I got married. My brother did that for me. I asked my brother to do it for me. And I remember being very upset. And okay, part of it may have, this is again why I understand and can relate to Glory a little bit more. As I say, we're on the hen party, and I was both hungover and drunk at the same time. And I remember talking to my bridesmaid at the time and explaining that, you know, it's a huge haul, but it happened when I was 4, but then struggling to accept it, but then not wanting to accept it, and then being angry, but then being sad. And I understood those feelings from Glory on quite a fundamental level, and that was made it very difficult to listen to, but at the same time, fantastic to listen to, because you realise you aren't the only one. You know you're not the only one, but you don't necessarily know you're not the only one, because it's a feeling. Right. It's a very internal, it's a very selfish feeling almost. But reading it in a story like this actually it makes you think, actually, I'm not the only one. And can you handle that? Yeah, actually, I can now. That, you know, it's like, you know, problem shared is a problem halved. It's like knowing that other people have the same feelings under the same or similar circumstances makes you feel better about it. It doesn't make it better, but it makes you accept it a little bit more. I don't know if I'm making sense.
You are.
But yeah, it was seeing her growth to move away from the fact that she's living in her mother's shadow, following her mother's footsteps, and realising, no, I'm not. And I can understand that the graduation being a trigger for these emotions. It never leaves you.
Yeah, isn't it? So I don't have any of those experiences, so I read the book differently than you read the book. But isn't it amazing to think how this one book affects different people in different ways? Like, sometimes you don't realize it. Sometimes it's just a fun thing that you do. You read a book.
Yeah.
But just, like, hearing your experience of it makes me love this book even more than I already did. I love it as an outsider, and you love it as someone from the inside. And that's amazing to me. And I know that's silly to say, because it's a book, but it's amazing.
The power of the story is phenomenal. long before the internet, books brought people together. Books made people realise that they're not alone and that there are people who are the same as them, that the people are very different from them, that there's so much that you need to learn. And that all stemmed from oral history, you know, the evolution of story. This is just a natural extension to it. And, you know, the fact that we're breaching 4,500 miles to discuss this book, you know, again, it's the evolution of the story, and it's just absolutely bloody phenomenal. Yeah. I don't know. This book probably has affected me more than any of the other ones that we've ever read. Yeah. And the more I think about it, the sadder I get, but the more happy I am for Glory. It's strange. And if that was the intention of E.S. King, she's absolutely bloody spot on.
She's brilliant.
Yeah, and this
she is amazing.
This is probably the rawest I've felt reading a book. And as I'm reflecting on it, it feels like it's getting harder. It's weird. It's weird. But like I say, that's the power of the story.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just...
Can I tell you...
Yeah?
I want to tell you something, and it is also going to sound silly at the same time. And I know that we don't even know each other in real life.
No. But,
like, you know, we've never met in person. But I think meeting you through the podcast has been my favorite thing about doing it for the entire year plus that I've done it. I think meeting you and talking about books with you, it's my favorite thing that I've done. And I know that who knows if we will ever get to see each other in real life. I hope that we do. But yeah. I just want you to know that you are my friend and I love you. And I'm glad that we have come together to do this. And now that we are both weepy.
Yeah.
Can we do something that's more fun?
I love you too. And I'm still like eternally grateful that you... One thought was funny, like, you're the only person. And that you asked me to do this, because it's a phenomenal experience, and it's hilarious, and it's 2 o'clock in the morning text messages to each... Well, 2 o'clock in the morning for me, text messages to each other. And then they just go absolutely random and offbeat, and it's just, yeah, it makes my life better. Yeah, I love you too. Okay, right, let's move on.
Let's do something more fun. Let's say that it's time. It's time for Would You Rather.
It's time, it's time, it's time.
It's time, it's time. It's time, it's time for Would You Rather. Normally, Would You Rather starts right here, and when we have a special guest, we introduce them. But everything happened out of order this time. After a completely unexpected Twitter conversation with A.S. King right after Claire and I recorded this episode, she said she would have joined us. So, we decided to re-record our Would You Rather portion and drag her in. So, here we are, right at that conversation, and then we have Would You Rather with A.S. King. You know, yesterday morning, when we were tweeting back and forth, I was thinking, like, yeah. I should ask her if she wants to join us when we record. But then I thought, no, that's way too short notice. And she'll be like, no way. And then you tweeted later that you would have joined in. I was like, damn it, I missed my opportunity. I should have done it. But now you're here anyway, because you're amazing. So
I love talking. I love podcasts. And so, you know, and I love talking about books, and I love talking to readers, and I don't know, all of this stuff. So I figured, why not? Because I love when people have good conversations about books. I think it's awesome. And when it's one of mine, it's kind of meta. Because I'm an outsider to my own books too, right? Because when I'm writing them, it's just like reading them. I don't have any plans. I go into my books clueless. So it's kind of fun to be able to talk about surprises or anything like that. So
yeah, sure. So we always ask one question on social media. And this time, you know, and we try to make it general enough that anyone can answer it without having read the book. Which we want them to read the book, but we know that everyone doesn't read all of the books that we read, because we read too many books. But we asked, would you rather be able to see a person's history or their future? Just looking at them, you know, seeing exactly what our characters see, but, you know, just either one side or the other, the history or the future. And, you know, we got a lot of good responses on Facebook. Our responses were 56% history and 44% future. On Instagram, it was 72% history and 28% future. And Twitter was 57-43. Everyone wants to see the history instead of the future.
Wow. So, I'm shocked. Yeah. I poll on Twitter and I said future. I feel bad because I lost. Now I'm competitive. I'm kidding. I'm not.
There's no loss in it. It's what can you handle or what do you want to handle? Or
okay, interesting. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah. So I also said that I would rather see the future as well. Mm. And Claire, you said history, right?
Yeah, but mine was more of like for like a shits and giggles issue because I was like, I would write like the best history theses. I would like the best history books. I would be known as the history guru of the world because I would have literally seen everything and being able to put it down and be like, whoa, Claire, that's amazing. It's like you're almost there. And I'll be like, yeah.
I love it.
And I want to see the future, yes, because it would be great if I could see myself like leading a revolution, but also kind of like Ellie, I want to see the cool boats and spaceships.
That's what I want to see. I want to see the spaceships. I definitely want to see space. I want to see space stations. I want to see, but what I really want to see is like the thing, I'm awful cynical, like in reality when it comes to this, but I'd really like to see like the world get its shit together. And I'd like to see people giving a shit about each other and taking care of each other. And if that would be in the future, I'd love to see it. And I know, I'm pretty sure, like, that's the most idealistic. Like, I know I live on Sesame Street. I get it. Like, I know I'm in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. I have just arrived by trolley. I get it. But I still am allowed to want that. I'm still allowed to wish it and hope it and be let down when I do get to the future and everybody's still assholes to each other. I'm still allowed to be disappointed by that because we can do better.
The species needs to do better. And, you know, if you're living on Sesame Street, I'm two doors down away next to Bert and Ernie.
And that's going to put me as Oscar the Grouch in the garbage can, but I'm there too.
That's fine. I'll just throw banana skins at you.
Okay, good. I like it. Thank you. I appreciate it. Oh, my God.
We did have some good responses on Facebook as well, and we had one on Instagram. So we had Fiona on Facebook said that she wants to see history for me, as I'm fascinated by the people who came together that allowed me to be born. Also, seeing the future would freak me out in case we got hit by a meteorite and went the way of the dinosaurs, although that might curb our overpopulation. Who else did we have?
Bob on Facebook said, I'd rather see their future, partly to give me glimpses of my own, but I also would rather not judge folks for what they have done, as folks can change. And that is a very nice bit about the story. Folks can change, and they do.
Yeah, you know, people can change, and I think that's part of your Sesame Street idealistic method. Did we have any others you want to cover, or?
Well, most everyone else was just, I don't want to know someone's future, because what if they died the next day? That would be too sad for me. And then that was Candy on Facebook. And then Social Shop Girl 384 on Instagram wants to see the future so she can see if she's in it. But still, it's very interesting to see what people think of, especially when you pose that question to them. And here we are knowing, like, but if you see the future, you see everything. And if you see the history, you see everything, like generations and generations and generations. And, you know, yeah.
They're not people's genealogy so much easier. Oh. I think I just want an easy academic life. Okay, so another would you rather question. Right. Would you rather eat only radioactively cooked food, i.e. microwave food, or never eat neon processed food again?
I just had some cheese balls a little bit with my dinner. Because they were there, we had. There's a reason we had them in the house this week. But I would give up all orange. Yeah, I'd give up orange food. I couldn't eat microwave food all the time. No, I can barely eat out. So no. I'd give up the processed food because I don't really eat it anyway. So that's easy. That was easy for me. No sacrifice.
Yeah, there's no sacrifice for me either because it would help my waistline to give up the neon food. But I love to cook. I love to get fresh ingredients and produce, and I love to bake cakes. And, you know, the plan is my son, who's five next week, we're going to make a meringue pavlova this weekend because he's always wanted to do that. So it's kind of like
pavlova, and nobody in America makes pavlova. What is with this? Have you had an Eaton mess ever? I just found
it. I love Eaton mess. Eaton mess is absolutely delicious.
I just made it last week here for the first time. I was like, I have to have this. I got two egg whites and just started making meringue. I was like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm making meringue. He's like, why? I'm like, just trust me.
Yeah.
And then I got the strawberries and the cream. We were all good. Anyway, so I'd much rather just, give up all microwave food as well. Yep. No, that's...
Imagine, are you giving up your neon food as well?
Definitely getting rid of my neon food. I would eat my raw vegetables all day long, and that's fine with me.
Sweet. Cool.
That's an easy one. No sacrifice there. What's the next one? What do you got?
Would you rather smile at people in the mall or take pictures of people in the mall?
Smile at people in the mall, because I am that weirdo who smiles at everybody and is willing to talk to everybody. And, you know, you could be that only person's saving grace that day by giving someone a smile. You could be their only human interaction that day by smiling at somebody. So I would 100% smile at people in the mall. Plus, I wouldn't know what to do with the pictures of the people.
Now, I was a photographer for years, and I love taking pictures. However, one of the reasons I was more of a darker, I was a darkroom technician, so I was more into the darkroom, right, and into the chemistry, much like Darla. The reason was is because I couldn't ask people if I could take their picture. I couldn't walk up to strangers and say, I'm sorry, do you mind if I take a picture? And when I had to for class, that's fine. But I just never felt comfortable doing it. And then, especially like to travel places and like live other places, I just never felt comfortable asking strangers at all. So I would also be a smiler because I couldn't ask people in the mall to get their pictures. And for the same reason, of course, that Claire just said, which was really, really nice. And I didn't think of it, but I only thought of my own selfish reasons because I don't ask. Can I take your picture? But also because, I could actually make someone's day. Or freak someone out. And I'm up for either.
Yeah. I can imagine you being the person who want to freak people out as well.
Yes, of course. I actually, on my walk home today, I smiled at everyone that I encountered. And the only person who acknowledged me and smiled back was the mailman.
Really?
That makes me want to go back and answer the first one differently. I'd like to see the history, please. Thank you, not the future. Anyway. My host just went right down the Sesame Street toilet, just letting you know.
No, Big Bird will rescue you. It's fine. It's fine. Well, Snuffleupagus will reach his trunk down. So would you rather see what Glory sees or what Ellie sees? So essentially, would you like to see the war and probably the more cusynical side of life? Or would you rather see the naked people and the Jupiterians?
I'd have the heavy stuff that's coming. I'd rather prepare for the heavy stuff.
What about you, Amanda?
Yeah, me too. I mean, it would be awful, but you would be able to be prepared, and you would know that, like, especially in Glory's case, you know, she didn't even know at the beginning of the book if she was still going to be around later. And as the book progresses, you know, she can see, like, she understands that she is the one in the tunnel. She understands that she is the sniper. She understands that she's the one who's going to do all of this stuff. So I think it would be nice to be able to be prepared and to realize that, you know, you can do things and you are preparing yourself for the future and that you are going to do great things. So I think it would be better to see Glory's future for sure. Or what Glory sees, not what Ellie sees. I don't want to see naked people, like, anyway. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't want to see the hippy dippy stuff. I want the, as much as it would scare me, and as much as I would be intimidated, and possibly, I don't know how much I could handle it because I haven't experienced it. I would want to know the real story, not the hippy dippy commune / cult. / sex crazed mess of it all. Yeah.
Oh no.
I do always wonder what happens with Ellie though. Like, what becomes of Ellie?
Yeah.
More Jupiterians. Teenage pregnancy.
Yikes.
I don't know. I think she's all right. I think she ends up being all right. I don't know.
Last question. Would you rather drink the bat or not drink the bat?
With caveat?
You can add in the caveat if you'd like.
Okay, so you in full knowledge that you will see the past and the future transmissions, but not if they're like Glorious Ellie's or something different. It's like suited to you. So you're not necessarily going to see the war. You're not necessarily going to see the hippie doodads. It's going to be suited to you and your personality, your perspective, your outlook.
Yeah, I drink the bat for $100. I'd do it. You know why? Because what the hell? Why not? I'm only here once. I'd give it a shot. It's like a cologne. I'll try it once.
Yeah. I would drink the bat as well. But not with warm beer. I'm offended by that. Deeply offended by the warm beer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to drink it in the warm beer. Give it to me like any other way. Yeah. I'll drink it. But I don't want to drink it in the warm beer. No.
Or brown. I'm not drinking it if it's in brown pop either. You know my aversion to brown pop. I can't stand fizzy drinks.
So I'll drink it. Whatever it is. Whatever we're mixing it with. As long as it's not cheap, warm, gross beer, which I imagine that's exactly what they had. Yeah. I don't want that.
And I think that's based off my first beer. Yeah, because it was a warm Genesee cream ale. Yeah, right out of the garage in the middle, like in summer. Like it was just sitting there. It's probably in 90 degrees.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. I was too young to be drinking it. I just wanted to try it. It didn't get me drunk or anything. It was just disgusting. This is way too young, and it was way too warm. But all the same, it's a desperate. I got a six pack from somebody, but it wasn't refrigerated. But it was perfect, I thought, for the night. But yeah, I would drink the bat. I would, because I mean, I'm here now anyway. Like, if ignorance is bliss, I'm already. I missed the boat. I missed the boat already, on the bliss. So I'll take the truth and I'll face it from here on out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are good questions. You guys should make all the questions for everybody all the time.
It takes a lot for us to come up with them sometimes. And sometimes it just, we'll and ah over them for like weeks. And then sometimes it's like, it has to be this. It just has to be. And yeah, thank you.
Sometimes they're more ridiculous than they were this time. We've asked some weird questions.
Yeah, there's going to be, I mean, if you ever get to reading, I crawl through it. First of all, I say brace yourself. And second of all, that'll be some interesting would you rather. Nice one. Well, thank you. Thanks for, I don't know, thanks for caring and bringing glory back into my life and making me think about her for a second. I just actually watched, have either of you watched Captain Fantastic, the film with Viggo, can you ever pronounce his last name?
Mortensen.
Yeah. Okay. All right, it's not a superhero film, even though it sounds like it is one, but it's not. And I highly recommend it, especially if you liked this book. I think that it's funny because, I mean, the movie came out long after I wrote the book, but it's something that connects with me. It connects with my family. It was my daughter's favorite film as well, but it talks about similar stuff like mental illness, things like this, and just sort of, I don't know, the fallout of losing somebody, young and stuff. So, but it's also really funny in spots and really wrong. And I really like, plus there's some full frontal of ego and it's pretty spot on. Anyway, on that note, and I played Fluke last night when we were watching it, right? Like we paused it right there and there he is, like, and it's just there. And so my 12-year-old daughter's sitting there and she's like, but hold on a second. She wants to talk about something. And she's the one who paused it right there. And in fairness to all of us, let's be fair, if you with the internet, like I would much rather she just saw a still of Viggo, right, in the buff, no problem. And that be her introduction to, you know, the male body. Anyway, look, you guys rock. Thank you very much for having me. I'm going to go and like, I think I have to work on a thing. Do I have to work tonight still? Not fair.
Thanks. Well, thanks for joining us, especially completely spur of the moment. Like, we normally... try for weeks and months to get an author on, and you're like, hey, yeah, let me do it. So that was amazing. We really appreciate you.
You're all here. It's great.
So much.
Yeah, take it easy. Thanks a million for all that. And if you ever need me to pop in again, tell me. And have a good day. And go and smile at people on the way to work tomorrow, even if they don't smile back. Actually, eat a load of like Oreos or something so that your teeth are just full of something. Right? And just mess with people now.
Yes. Spin it. For sure.
Yeah. All right. See you guys. Take it easy.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Are you dying? You're dying.
I'm dying.
Final thoughts. Final thoughts.
You will do great things. You just have to have courage.
I like that. Mine is not living your life is like killing yourself, except it takes longer. I really liked that thought.
Yeah.
So you should go out and you should live your life. And then you will do great things if you have courage. Look, they're tied together.
Yeah, I think people get... do you think there's a misconception that great is saving the world from misogynistic assholes like Glory? Or a great thing could just be smiling at somebody in the street?
Yep.
So just...
It's like one of my actual life lessons. Always be great.
Don't
and it doesn't matter
person.
What your great is. Yeah, don't be a garbage person. Always be great. Be great in great ways and in small ways. Just be great. Don't be a garbage person. Have courage. Free yourself.
Can you handle that?
Can you handle that? So many book quotes. But they're all so good.
They are. Good. It's a very quotable book.
Is. Oh, is it time for your fanfare?
So, I actually changed this one. I'm going to refer you to the top of the shop of the podcast. And just read some more A.S. King, because she is an astoundingly fantastic author and really seems to understand people.
Mm-hmm.
So just read anything by A.S. King, but as Amanda has already said, try Still Life with a Tornado as a starting point, and then just delve into her back catalogue from there. There was another book that I haven't read myself that I thought looked quite interesting, and it was called I'll Give You the Sun by Jandy Nelson. I think this is actually going to be turned into a movie when I was having a quick look. So that could be interesting. So the synopsis is Jude and her twin Noah were incredibly close until a tragedy drove them apart and now they are barely speaking. Then Jude meets a cocky, broken, beautiful boy as well as captivating new mentor, both of whom may just need her as much as she needs them. What the twins don't realise is that each of them has only half the story, and if they can just find their way back to one another, they have a chance to remake their world. Sounded interesting.
Ooh, I like that.
It seemed more of a contemporary book, but it did fall under the contemporary with realism, the same as Glory. So I thought it sounded quite interesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I like it. Maybe we'll read it one day on the podcast.
Add it to the pile.
Add it to the pile. The never-ending pile.
Which is not a bad thing.
No. I feel like I need to read newer books. But then I guess the Gail Carriger's that we're reading are new, so maybe I shouldn't feel so bad about that. And we also did the J. Kristoff books, and those were new.
Teeth are still new things, so maybe Teeth is still fairly new as well.
Yeah, Teeth just came out this year, so never mind.
You're just talking a lot of rubbish.
I am. A lot of the books that we have talked about recently have just come out this year.
However, I was thinking about delving into older books. Even like older books that people read when they were growing up.
Ooh, that could be fun. All right. Forget I said that.
Said what?
I don't know. What? That's it for this episode of Fictional Hangover. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Claire.
Join us next time as we discuss Competence, Book 3 in The Custard Protocol by Gail Carriger. Send us an email at fictionalhangover@gmail.com if you'd like to join us for an upcoming Would You Rather segment, or if you have any books to recommend. Also, be sure to look out for our next Would You Rather poll and all the other polls that we're doing now on social media. Until next time, remember, the only cure for a fictional hangover is another book. Can you handle that?
That was amazing. You can find us at fictionalhangover.com. Follow us on Instagram at fictionalhangover. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fictionalhangover and on Twitter at fictionalhangover, no ER. Also, a special thanks to Liz Emerson for our music. You can find her on Facebook and Patreon. Thanks for listening.